Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, the definitive sports video game show, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back. It is summer vacation time. It is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, July 31st, 2015. The lazy, hazy days of summer. Owen Good is here. Brian Weedeye is here. Sumit Sarkar is here. And Chase Beckett is here.
Chase you're Beckett. So close. You were so close. You almost had a last name. It was really good.
All right.
It was a nice try.
Give me the right pronunciation.
Becott.
Okay.
Wow. Rich, I was about to correct you, but I thought I had that wrong all along, and I just kept my mouth shut. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. Wow. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Chase, you are from Operation Sports. Introduce yourself to the Press Row Podcast listeners, if you could, sir.
So I am Chase Becott. I am the senior editor at Operation Sports. So basically, I am Chris Sanders' flunky. And beyond that, I worked in video games for about 3 years. I worked on the Madden series from, 11 to 14. And then, yeah, now I'm back on this side of things and enjoying myself and being on the show now for the first time. It's very exciting.
No, we're very happy to have you here. Tell us all the dirty laundry right here and name names. Go.
Everyone is wonderful. No, I have no bad things to say about anyone ever.
That is very boring, sir.
Yeah, I'm
very
sorry.
Boring. All right, so I would like to officially announce that the Press Row Podcast has fired Chris Sanner. he is out permanently for reasons that our lawyers have advised us not to discuss on the show. So we'll just let that go. Chase is in for Chris. So, but all kidding aside, Chase, no, we're happy to have you here. It's been an interesting summer. Boy, a lot going on. A lot will be going on this fall as well. Lots of stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the crowded release calendar that's coming up. We're going to talk about Rocket League, the game that has taken over the world. We're going to talk about some new and interesting ways that sports game players are getting to experience things. We're going to go around the horn and just talk a little bit about what we have been playing this summer. Ryan Weedeye from Pasta Padre, let's start with you, sir. What have you been playing?
We're going to get into it later, but almost nothing but Rocket League.
Yeah.
I am playing the show still because we're in our online franchise. And so we're making progress on our second season of that now. After I went down in the World Series to TJ Lowerman.
He's also been fired from the show, by the way. TJ fired.
Yeah, I think he retired. He's gone off to some distant island.
Well, that's his story. So, you know.
Yeah.
But more other like than witness protection.
other than those games of the show though, it's been all Rocket League and I don't want to, you know, we already talked about it for a half hour on our video, Rich.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go into that too much yet because everybody else is going to be talking about it later. But the last 3 or 4 days, I've sat down and said, okay, I'm going to play a few. And I get something in my mind that I have to leave only after I've won 2 or more consecutive matches.
Ah.
I can't leave on a loss. Huh. And so, and then it like 6 hours goes by. And I finally
suck.
No, it's balanced. I think my record right around 500 or so, which makes it tough, especially when you're playing with random people.
I know, but you say you only had to win 2 in a row.
Yeah, but then I want to see if I can keep the streak going.
Oh, okay, I got you. All right.
So that's the thing is it gets its hooks in you, and then you just don't want to walk away from it. So that's been where all my time has been going in the last few weeks.
Well, you and many other people, and we'll get into it in a little bit, but Rocket League, I have been shocked and delighted at just how pervasively popular that game has been with all sorts of people. And it seems like it's even in the last couple of days, even gotten more coverage across more places, which is interesting, coming, you know, a few weeks after launch. Owen Good, what have you been playing?
Well, I have gotten into Rocket League lately. I think I came in on the tail end of it after seeing everybody talking about it so much and going, well, what in the hell is this? Have played it. really enjoyed, you know, collecting about 15 trophies in that first match. Holy crow. But it's something where, the appeal to me is obvious. And I think that this is a game that, it's one of those games that looks like the people who made it would have made it for themselves, even if they didn't have a publisher or anywhere else to put it out. It is fun. It's a little bit off of my taste, but I don't deny that it's an entertaining game. I have a real problem just myself. I'm always overrunning the angle to the ball and, going too fast for things. But I think that's kind of the appeal of Rocket League too, which is when you get a bunch of human players out there who are all doing the same thing, because I think in racing games, everybody, the instinct is always to sit on the triggers, or to, use the e-brake to spin out. So you have all these wild maneuvers, and that ends up, especially when you have human players, creating a lot of opportunities for really wild goals. And we've seen a lot of that over the past couple of weeks with these insane highlights and everybody saying, well, this is the most insane Rocket League goal. And you know that it's going to get beaten by something even more crazy tomorrow. So I have played some, not as much as all. I am still playing, and we'll talk about this more later on, the Rory McIlroy PGA Tour. That, I think, is more of a completionist urge to go ahead and and hit some career milestones there, and then maybe move along. And then actually, people are going to think I'm crazy, but I've been playing Fallout New Vegas. I just got bit by the bug coming out of E3 and started a couple of new playthroughs and, just wanted to get back into that world. And I've had a lot of fun with it and, really, really looking forward to Fallout 4.
You know, it's so funny because, first of all, I don't think that's crazy. I really sometimes, not all the time, but more than a few times over the last few years have gone back to a game that I knew that I liked from several years before and played it. In fact, there was recently an announcement of the game Mafia 3 coming out, which got a lot of people saying how great Mafia 2 was. Mafia 2 is a game that I bought and never did take out of the shrink wrap. So I think, kind of like what you're talking about, Owen, going back and playing another game. Now, granted, I never played it, but Mafia 2 is, 7 years old, 5 years old, something like that. But
yeah. It's 5 years old. I played and reviewed Mafia 2. I don't have a great opinion of it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
It tries to do some things and tries to be kind of like quote unquote realistic in certain fashions, and it's not great after coming off of the original.
It's kind of tell the truth, but anyway.
But New Vegas is fabulous.
Oh yeah,
you don't run into a game breaking bug.
Well, the version. I mean, I'm 4 years after that thing launched. I think I've only ran into a couple of hard freezes and nothing that trash to save. So I'm happy.
Yeah, that's all that matters, though.
Yeah.
Smitsar Carr, what have you been playing, man?
Well, I know this will be a huge surprise to every one of our listeners, every single one, but I've not been playing much in the way of video games these past few weeks. I had been playing Tomb Raider, the 2013 game, which I had never played before, but I think shortly after E3, it was on sale on PSN, the PS4 version, the definitive edition. It's like $13. So it's like, sure, why not? I heard good things about this game, and it's really great. I'm probably like 15-ish hours into it. It's longer than I was expecting, but it's a lot of fun. I have not seen too many of the gruesome death animations that they devised for Lara Croft in that game. Because I'm just awesome at video games, obviously. but it's really good, and it scratches that itch for me. I'm one of those people who's like a completionist. Like I used to be really bad with this. Like I'm the one who got who beat Spyro 2 Ripto's Rage like 116%. Like I got all the extra stuff and collected all the gems and things like that. No, literally, you can I think it's 116% to beat that game completely. Like
they have, I trust you.
These things to, anyway. Tomb Raider is great, but I put it down for some like Netflix binging started with the first season of BoJack Horseman, which is uneven but like really good overall and gets really great by the end of it.
Mm-hmm. It's surprisingly dark.
Oh yeah,
as the season goes on, yeah.
Yeah. Oh no, it gets real dark, and then so I just started the second season tonight. I'm a couple episodes in, and I heard the second season is like, you know, one of the best shows on TV material. So that's exciting. I also blew through finally the last season of How I Met Your Mother, which is like not good, but I was at the point where I was like, I have seen all 8 seasons or the first 8 seasons. I might as well go down with the ship. And yeah, it was pretty bad, but yeah, I'm excited to do all that. Oh, I did play some video games that are not Tomb Raider or Netflix. I reviewed a couple of games for Polygon recently. The fifth episode of Game of Thrones from Telltale, reviewed that last week, and then this week I reviewed the first episode of the new King's Quest. So, episodic adventure games, that's me. I like those games.
Who's making the new King's Quest games?
It's The Odd Gentleman, which is the same studio that did The Misadventures of P.B. Winterbottom.
Okay, all right, right on.
And it's published under the Sierra like label, which Activision brought back, but... Yeah, Game of Thrones, I think people know what that is by now, or how those games go. King's Quest is, there's a lot of good stuff in it. I really like the story and the voice acting and the animation. It's a nice looking game. And the puzzles are not too stump-worthy. That's not a word. I don't know. They're not really crazy difficult puzzles, and they're not as obtuse as a lot of old school adventure games puzzles were. But the problems that I had with that game were that it's, in terms of playing it, it's less fun than I think it could be. There's no, like, your character moves pretty slowly, and a lot of the game's puzzles are solved by, like, you go here, get this item, then bring it back to this person, or whatever. And I feel like it could have been, like, an hour shorter if I could have just moved faster, if I had, like, a fast traveler or something like that. But I definitely think it's worth checking out, and I'm excited to see how the series goes from here.
Very good. Chase, what have you been playing?
So, beyond Rocket League, obviously, I've been playing... I actually started playing NHL again this week to get hyped for the beta, because I do have a nice little group of friends that will be playing the EASHL portion of that. So that'll be fun, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't a complete clown when I picked that game back up later this week. And then beyond that, Journey. I had to play Journey again a couple times when it came back out last week, and I just still love that game just so much. And beyond that, not much. I played a good amount of Hardline when I came back from E3 because I played Battlefront there, and I just needed something to like scratch that itch again after playing Star Wars. But it's kind of fallen back off. So, yeah, just those couple of games.
You know, it's funny because last night I was sitting in my, you know, my home office. It's like 11:30, 11:45. I got like 45 minutes, you know, before I really need to go to bed. I'm like, man, I could play so many different things right now that I am playing. For example, MLB The Show. Brian, you mentioned it earlier. I'm playing that regularly. We've got our online league, which is working great. We're in year two. Year one, Brian, I mean, it basically worked, right? I mean, there were no major problems, right? I mean, unless I'm forgetting something.
There were some games that maybe didn't record or we had to reset, and in the playoffs, some fatigue issues and things of that nature. But yeah, I mean, we were pretty pleased with it because we were just happy we got to play and it actually progressed.
Yep.
and you know, and what we, all the time we were investing, was not wasted. So I think even still, every time I advanced games or every time we went to play another game in the playoffs, Rich, I still wondered, is this going to be the time when it breaks?
Because
it took like 20 minutes for TJ and I to connect to one World Series game where it kept failing the invite. And I assumed, here it is, you know, here it is. We finally come about it. But we didn't, you know, we decided not to go through an off season and do a draft and stuff. We just started a whole nother new season.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the cleaner way to go about it until we know they've really got a handle on everything to do with that.
Yeah.
Was the stamina thing, just out of curiosity, is that having to do with the pitchers not recovering stamina between games, or are they losing it too quickly?
So, yeah. So in the playoffs, there are no off days. So even so, this came into play because TJ swept his league championship series and mine went to six games, but he didn't get credit for any off days. So when we went to our games, all his guys were still fatigued, and my rotation was actually set up perfectly, and he had to start with his number four or five starter because of that. So that was one of the issues, was no off days, and also I don't think it accounts for how pitchers tend to roll out their three man or four man staff, because they do have an off day every once in a while in the playoffs. Mm. So I think that was where the main issue lay with that.
Okay.
So I've been playing a lot of MLB The Show, again, in our online franchise, and we've actually upped the number of players this time, Brian. In year one, I think it was just four of us, and now we got like
five.
It was five in year one, and what, do we have six or seven now? Because we added, I think, two guys.
Yeah, I think we've got two more. Yeah.
So we're up to seven, and I've actually got a couple of regular season head-to-head games, or at least three, with our man Jerkface Killa. Is that Dylan's?
No, Jerkface Fave.
Jerkface Fave. That's
as in Dylan fave. Favorite. Jerkface Fave. Yes.
Okay. Still a jerk fave.
Although like Jerkface Killer. Jerkface Killer is a classic name.
So I got that, playing MLB The Show online franchise. I'm also playing my offline franchise, which I've spoken about quite a bit, where I'm basically almost exactly day and date with the regular season in the real world with my Mets in my MLB The Show offline franchise, which I play exclusively on my treadmill, where I do the player lock for five or six innings and then play the rest of the game the full way after that. And so that's just the show right then and there. Of course, we're still going on with our Madden franchise, which, you know, it's just a couple of nights, or a couple of games a week. Most of the games, not all, but most of the games are against the CPU now because everybody has basically left. And we got, you know, a couple of the original guys and a few newcomers. So that's, you know, that's something. Obviously, Rocket League. You know, last night I'm about to go to bed, and I got Brian Weedeye and Pete Dodd, you know, tweeting at me, "Come on, let's play Rocket League. Oh, let's go. I'm going to bed."
Let me tell you one more thing about that is I hadn't played 2v2 ranked, and that was fun. Pete and I, we weren't even on a mic, but we were playing as a team, and it was pretty brilliant. I had preferred the 3v3, but the 2v2 when you're with a friend is pretty great also.
But I'm also hugely into golf, and not just the Rory McIlroy PGA Tour golf, which, you know, as we've talked about, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about, is not exactly the greatest golf game of all time, but, you know, it does have redeeming qualities, and I do enjoy it. I'm also playing the Seasons mode in Golf Club. I went out and I bought the Seasons mode, which was $10 in Golf Club, which gives you, you know, another mode and some new, new courses that you can play and new themes and stuff. There's a lot of good, there's a lot of great choices you can make just right now, you know, in sports games. I mean, again, I'm playing right now MLB The Show, Madden, the Golf Club, Rory McIlroy PGA Tour, and Rocket League. It's kind of amazing. So, and that's not even counting NBA 2K15, which if I weren't actively playing all these other games, I would be playing, which leads me into tonight's first big topic, which is, and Brian Weedeye, you wrote about this on Hit the Pass last week, the sports game release calendar is completely broken. You've got, what, nine games, 10 games coming out in a four-week, five-week period over the course of late August through, you know, late September, early October. Brian Weedeye, what are people who love sports games supposed to do when so many games come out in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, I knew this was an issue, and then I put the article out there, and I got a ton of response back on this on social media and even directly emailed to me, because we are looking at a situation where it's not just about what games do you want, but it's you have to pick and choose from such a wide assortment of games that all kind of appeal to the same demographic. so you've got, within a five-week period, you've got Madden, NHL, FIFA, Pro Evolution, NBA 2K16, and NBA Live 16. And then you've got a couple others which kind of are on the fringe of what we consider traditional sports games, which Forza 6 and Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 and Blood Bowl 2. They're all in there. And then you've got other games, other big AAA-type titles around that time period. And so a lot of people really do find the crunch here that they're – they're stuck in a situation where they would like to buy that. Maybe they'd like to buy one of these games, but they can't because they're already buying one or two of the others. It's a really bad situation that sports gaming is in, where we have all these bunched together, and then the remaining 11 months of the year, we might have two or three sports games. So there's a lot of movement that could be made if these publishers would do that. And there's obviously a lot of considerations that go into release dates and not wanting to move release dates. Although I think the potential to possibly sell more in different points of the year is there for these games if they actually did it. It's a dilemma that a lot of people are facing. And even for us, even for the people who cover these games, it's difficult to look at this list, because it's not just also what games can you afford to buy. It's how much time do you have to play all these games? Exactly. I can't play all these games the amount of time I would want or could possibly ever expect to. Yeah. So it's a lot of that going on, and that's why I wrote that article, and I think it definitely resonated with people out there.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not just the money. It's also the time, right? Like, I'm sitting here last night. I got an hour to play a game, and I got to choose between 4 and 5, and, you know, it's summer. Only a couple of games have released this calendar year. Chase, what do you get any sense of among the Operation Sports community that, whoa, like, how are we going to have the time and money to spend on these games? Do you get that sense at all, even, or perhaps among the OS crew, or is it perhaps not as big a deal as we might think?
I think there's nothing inherently wrong with it. That I think that the fans of the site and people who are visiting the site are talking about that much. I think it's more like, you know, selfishly, yeah, like on the editorial side, it's going to suck doing all those games at once, but I don't have a big issue with it in and of itself if it made sense. I just don't think a lot of the release dates make sense. I think it was years ago where Madden moved its release date a couple weeks up to more coincide with beginning of the season. And I like that concept a lot for most of the games, where I think, again, Sony's game, I think they moved it up a little bit so it was closer to the release, the start of the regular season there. So I personally like when the games come out when the real regular season begins. And so that's what kind of made the basketball one kind of confusing to me, because now I think it comes out, 4 weeks before the season itself starts. I know the NBA season usually starts on around Halloween. So that's more the part that bothers me, and that's the part that I see being kind of confusing about this, more than kind of jamming everything into that one and a half month time frame. And also, one other thing that goes beyond that seems confusing to me is I thought we had kind of proven that games didn't have to come out in the fall to like do well. I know obviously Christmas and Thanksgiving still games do really well, but it seems like a lot of the regular non-sports games had kind of stopped trying to jam everything into that window as well. So it just seems kind of strange to me that now it's kind of compressing itself again.
Owen Good, looking at that, you know, very short amount of time and significant amount of games, which of the big time sports games do you think has the least impact to all of the competition, and which game or games are, you know, the most negatively impacted, you know, by this stiff competition in such a short amount of time?
Well, I think it's if any game has the hardest uphill climb, it's going to be NBA Live. I mean, you know, you're talking about, see, here's the thing, you know, as others have mentioned, it's not just that it's, you know, so many games within a short span, all of them costing $60, all of them having special editions, all of them having downloadable content and other incentives and crap like that. It's, you know, they're all big brands and they're all singular brands. You know, there's only one NFL game. NBA 2K has been the go-to, you know, NBA basketball game for anyone, you know, the past decade, basically. You know, NHL is the only thing in its class, et cetera, et cetera. FIFA and Pro Evolution, there's some sort of a debate. FIFA has the licensing edge. It's, you know, it's for the true secondary players who are really trying to come up to, you know, challenger status, where, like, you know, that's the kind of thing, I guess NBA Live's advantage is that it's going to go into EA Access so probably so soon and get some uptake that way, and then flow its user base into, you know, NBA Live Ultimate Team and whatever other, you know, microtransactions it's got going on. you know, that's fine. As a main title, it's really hard. I mean, unless you have a serious grudge and you're angry with 2K Sports for some reason, and they've done things to make people mad, you know, that it's there's still they have not they've righted the ship, and who knows? I mean, this could be a decent game that's coming forward, but there's nothing on the face of it that tells people you need to pre-order this right now. You need to get this on day one right now, and that is. Not just for sports, it's with anything else in video games, you know, where the rubber meets the road for those who are publishing them. So, you know, that's why, I of all the games that are out there, I mean, Pro Evolution Soccer, to me, looks like, you know, another game that could be sort of an afterthought and not really stand it. But that does have a very long user base, you know, people...
And that's strong in other regions where maybe the competition isn't as
rough. True, but the turmoil with its publisher and whatever the hell is going on with Konami and whatever its real commitment is to making video games people care about, you know, is another thing that's off-putting to a lot of people, and that's why they're being so silent leading up to Metal Gear Solid's release. This editorial message brought to you by Owen Good. But... NBA Live is the one that's got the toughest road to hoe.
If I could ask a question real quick. When you look at Live, though, and this is to anyone, if you want to answer, by all means, but like looking at Live, either there's two options, right? It's either we want to be first and we want to try to beat 2K, and I guess they really can't now, or they release 4 weeks later and they try to coincide with the start of the regular season. I don't know. I would assume trying to be first is the better option from the publisher standpoint, I guess. But I don't know what the right answer is there. I don't think like it makes sense to get completely out of the way and be like, no, it's released in like December. But
normally I don't think you'd want to be late to the market and let your competitor have it to itself, right? But when NBA 2K decided they were going to bump up the release by a week and a half, essentially because they're giving it out 4 or 5 days earlier to those who pre-order. Even more so than just the week they bumped up the official release date, that Live would probably be better off having that month buffer, because if people are choosing a single basketball game, maybe you end up getting people who want to buy two basketball games if you space them out. I don't know. But it's not going to be able to take 2K head on, and then it's going to be at the bottom of the totem pole with every other sports game in the mix there also. But it's a no-win situation, I think, when it comes down to it.
But I also think, I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this, you know, 2K Sports is desperate for people to pre-order this game and go ahead and commit to it, you know, despite the past 3 years where the launch week, 2 weeks,
month.
3 weeks, yes, have been an absolute disaster. And I could use a more colorful word if I didn't want, you know, Rich to have to take time to bleep it.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. You know, and they want people to put their money down despite everything that's going on in the past. And EA Sports can go, all right, you know, fine. Maybe EA Sports is going, sure, we will put this out on our own time frame. We're also the brand that people recognize as the sports leader, if that exists, you know, that people buying gifts when it's in November and aunts and grandmas are looking for things to buy their nephews and grandsons and they see the EA Sports logo and go, sure, why not? And then there's also just, sure, let 2K, they have not shown anything to this point that says they can solve their online problems. If they do this year, I will stand corrected, but it will need an actual launch showing that they have no problems for us to go, okay, this thing is over.
Well, if it wasn't for leaks, Owen, we'd know nothing about the game at this point.
Well, that's true too. But EA Sports might be looking at this and going, sure, fine, 2K, come out 4 days ahead of time, have that huge demand and hang yourself with it, because we know you can't support it. Because if there's one thing EA Sports does do consistently well, it's online multiplayer support.
Yep.
I mean, that's unchallenged.
How much, though, you know, I've talked about this, and I know you guys have, how much really has it, people get pissed, but their sales keep going up, right? I mean, 2K sales keep seemingly going up every year. So it's like one of these weird things where it's like, why do we fix it? Or not like, you don't have to look at it like that, but it's
yeah,
what's the problem?
Well, I mean, but I think, I mean, Chase, I think you're right, but I think it's also, you know, why would WB give, you know, PC players a decent port of Batman?
Yeah, yeah.
They can fix it after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with any publisher of any game, regardless of genre, is, you know, yeah, why should we, you know, create something that works on day one when we can fix it after the fact? And people howl in the specialty press and commenters rage and NeoGAF rages, but they still give us their money.
Yeah, well, there's also the question of, has over these years when 2K has struggled because of the load they brought on, has live been a viable alternative? It hasn't.
No.
So if people had a viable alternative, if they believed Live to be that, would 2K be more vulnerable? Probably, but Live isn't at that point yet.
Right. Submit. Here's a question I have for you. So Brian, in his article on Hit the Pass, talking about not only how the calendar, the release calendar, is busted, but he pitched a reshuffled deck. And Brian, I'll let you rattle that off in a minute, but Sumit, do you think that ultimately, let's say 2 years from now, the release calendar for sports games will be reshuffled somewhat to spread some of these out? Or do you think that it's basically for the next couple, you know, years, the foreseeable future, going to remain pretty much as it is now?
A reshuffling would be great, but I just don't see it happening, at least for the titles that are coming from major publishers. Because, as Owen pointed out, you know, they are so tied to their marketing and their marketing schedules and their, you know, quarterly earnings reports, that it's really, really difficult for them to make moves in their calendar just on those factors alone. And then when you consider just how devastating it could be to a product, annually developed product, to move that somewhere else in the year. It's really tough, because, you know, you look at games that have shifted significantly. You know, Tiger Woods was one of them. You know, that was originally a early summer release, like, you know, June, and then they moved back to the Masters once, you know, to the beginning of April once they got the Masters in. And that was, you know, I imagine a pretty crazy year for them to have, you know, whatever, 9 months to develop that, or you know, less than that to develop the game for that quick turnaround of, you know, putting out PGA Tour 11 in the, I think that was right, you know, put that out in June and then put the next one out the following April, you know, and that puts even more strain on the development team than an annual cycle already does. And I think you're also not going to see it happen because the way that these you know, release schedules are laid out is partly tied to the, as I was saying, the quarterly earnings reports. So, you know, EA, for example, counts on a huge fiscal third quarter every year, a fiscal second quarter and third quarter, because in the second quarter, which is from from, you know, July through September, you know, that's when they've got Madden. And they used to have NCAA, and then they've got, obviously, NHL and FIFA. Those are all huge sellers. And then in the third quarter, which is October, November, and December, you know, then they've got NBA, and 2K has got WWE and NBA 2K. And so for so long, they've had that built up of, you know, every year we've got these guaranteed sellers slotted into our calendar. To move those around, you know, even by a few weeks, if they shift from one fiscal quarter to the next, that's a big deal in terms of their stock price and you know, keeping their shareholders happy.
So, Brian Weedy, you weren't just complaining on behalf of all of us who love sports games. You also have a solution for this sports calendar problem. What, my friend, is that solution?
Yeah, it's not very realistic because it would involve everybody agreeing to move things around. But and as alluded to earlier, there actually isn't really much movement as far as quarterly goes. They all actually fall in the same quarter, with the exception of one game, which we haven't really talked about, and that's WWE, which should not be in October. It should be in March or thereabouts in the lead-up of WrestleMania. Makes the most sense. Clear that one out of the way, because that's still in that very busy month and a half period. So you'd start with MLB in its traditional mid-March type spot, WWE maybe in late March. Then May and June would be available to games that we've been seeing come out in those months, whether it's UFC, golf, maybe if you end up with a boxing game or a tennis game down the line, they can fill in there. And then the other major move would be the soccer games moving into July, which is in, right in advance of when most of the leagues around the world begin playing, including Premier League. I don't know why the soccer games have been coming out in September, but they'd fit, I think, perfectly fine in July.
I think, by the way, Brian, it is kind of weird. The Premier League kicks off in a week, and FIFA doesn't come out for more than a month after. I think it's sort of steeped in sort of this is how it used to be. I think the games used to come out, the FIFA games used to come out when they came out so that they could at least have the rosters correct after the initial sort of transfer period. But that those days are long since gone. You know, to me, that reason is no longer a valid reason.
Yeah. And so I think that's an important shift there. And then Madden can stay in its late August spot. NHL can back up a couple weeks to late September as opposed to mid-September. And then the NBA games, like Chase said, the NBA games need to go back into October. They need to really be late October, right before the season begins, as opposed to before the preseason even starts. I mean, it's ludicrous that those NBA games are coming out in late September, and that has really made things so much worse this year than they are any other year typically. So that's how I would lay it out. And then there's the dead months, well, the very busy month of November, and then the dead months of December, January, and February, where kind of the non-traditional sports games could fit in. You could see, you know, like a Rocket League type of game launching in one of those months and being successful. You're not going to get a $60 licensed product coming out in January or February. So, and then there's flexibility around those months too for arcade type games and everything of that sort. But that's, if those minor, well, relatively minor changes were made, if soccer moved up from mid-September to mid or late July, and the NBA games backed off, and then WWE moved out. It really lay out perfectly for consumers, and probably for publishers too, because I think they could be more successful when they have more breathing room that way.
I definitely agree. Well, all right, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I want to go back into a little bit. It's certainly been spoken about over on Hit the Pass and on Polygon and Operation Sports, but we haven't really had a chance to talk about it on the Press Row podcast. So I'm going to start with you, Chase. Are you surprised that Rocket League has really become so popular, not just with people who like sports games, but also just, you know, in general, people who play video games? And not only are you surprised, but what has the Operation Sports community's opinion of it overall been?
So first off, Operation Sports loves the game. I haven't seen, outside of obviously the major things like Madden and NBA 2K, I haven't seen such strong gravity towards something like this on OS in a while, where it's just like each night people are talking about, hey, you want to get a game in. And it's just, you know, it's just random people on the forums. It's not even, you know, close friends. So that's really cool. And it's, I think it speaks to the addictive, you know, nature of the game. And beyond that, I think what really helped obviously was that it was a PS Plus title. So, hey, you got PS Plus, you're good to go, and you can just hop on and do your thing. So that really is a big portion of it. And I think it got a 9 on our site, which it's our first 9 in a long time, I think. So editorial-wise, fan-wise, everyone is really digging the game.
Owen Good, are you surprised at not only the reception, but just the volume of people playing Rocket League? Yeah, sure, it was PlayStation Plus. Granted, it's PC as well. There's a lot of PlayStation Plus games that don't do anything, the numbers that Rocket League, which I think just today as we're recording, there's been over 5 million downloads. I mean, that's a lot.
I mean, no, I'm not really that surprised. I think it's the kind of thing that that touches I don't think that let me back up. Sports video games are often perceived as sort of an outlier to the rest of the video game discussion, and I get why. And usually when you're talking about, you know, licensed titles that use real-world rosters, it's a really big exclusionary thing because people don't know who all the players are or may not know, you know, the current, you know, how the game is played or anything like that. They're aware of it as a topic. They aren't aware of it as a game. I think Rocket League is one of those games where it's like it really taps into that need to play something that is competitive, definitely very social and easy to understand. And, you know, the rest of it just sort of takes care of itself. It's on its base, it strikes me as a very simple game that's not a pejorative. And it has, I think, really some great potential for just crazy mayhem. And there is, you know, in those, especially when you're talking about people who stream, especially when you're talking about, you know, the capturing capabilities and our GIF culture and social media and things like that, you know, that's where a lot of the appeal here is really, really understandable. I'm not going to say that this game was designed to exploit those things necessarily, but it certainly does explain why people have it's caught everybody's attention, and it's something that's so easily and visually understood. You know, slamming radio-controlled cars into a soccer ball, you know, and driving down the field, and of course, obviously, there are all sorts of strange physics, you know, variants. I mean, I would drive up the walls and expect to be falling to the ground, and I wasn't. And I'm still trying to figure out the fundamentals there, because that's how I play a sports video game. It's like, what's the fundamental gameplay here? Are my fundamentals sound? I'm a fish out of water there. But a lot of people have just charged into it headlong and are having a great time with it, and that's awesome. That's fantastic. And it's a very accessible title, especially when you consider that people treat accessible like a bad word. This is something that blends one of the easiest to understand. I can't call soccer a simple sport. That would really, really be denigrating it. But blends one of the easiest to understand sports genres, which is take this thing and put it in that goal, with driving video games, which, as I've mentioned before, is really easy to understand. You sit on one trigger to accelerate and the other to brake. And I think it's a winning combination and really ropes in a lot of people who have at least dabbled in both genres and have found this combination to be winning and very enjoyable, and more power to them.
You know, just last night I took Brian Wiedeye's advice and I went through the tutorial, both the basic and the advanced, and at one point mm-hmm. I learned how to fly, and I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh boy, I didn't really realize what that does.
Yeah, the more you play, the more stuff you start to figure out, and you don't even realize this at first, right? Because yeah. I didn't see other people flying around the arena. last night, Pete Dodd, and I posted a GIF on Twitter, he flew pretty much across the entirety of the arena to knock the ball in, which was I saw it happening and I was just in awe, right? And so there's so much involved with it. It's not easy because you still have to time it properly. And when I try to fly, I go soaring like right by the ball. So I mean, it's you get a handle on it though, because at first I was driving right by the ball. You know, the first few days just driving right by it. Now, you know, I've got that under control. But you know, there's flying. There's the angle you hit the ball with your vehicle, because you can flip it around while you're in air and everything. And that was a big thing for me to figure out, instead of just hitting the ball head on, where you're hitting it low, so it tends to go high. If you jump and flip your car and smack it with the bottom side of your car, you're going to get a flatter shot. I mean, it's all stuff like this that you start to figure out the more you play, and it just opens up your eyes to all the possibilities and how deep the game is. Even though on the surface it looks like it's just very simple, just drive around and knock a ball around, there's so much more to it.
And I think
go ahead, Jace.
Well, I think I would give a lot of credit to Psyonix, where, you know, they did a lot before the game came out, a lot of beta stuff, and you know, they were very open about getting this game into people's hands on the PC. And so what that did allow is, when the game did come out, I think that first week there was a massive Twitch tournament, and I think it had something like 33,000 people at its peak, maybe more or maybe a little less. And that's really impressive for, you know, a whatever you want to call it, a niche little sports title. And I think that goes back to having certain people already being super amazing at this game, because it has fewer mechanics, but it has deeper elements to those mechanics. And I think that always carries weight. And, you know, there's like this guy called Kronovi, who's like far and away like the best Rocket League player. Like, there's no, it's like not even a question. He's amazing and ridiculous. And he was, you know, allegedly he was on the team way back when, and then he was in part of all the play tests and the beta. So he just had so many hours on everyone else that when the game came out, like, he was the cheat code. But like, it's still just amazing to watch him, and then you just want to go and play, because you're like, well, I can do that. I mean, that's only like three buttons. Like, I can figure out how to do this. I just need to get in there and mess with it. And I mean, you soon realize you're not Kronovi, but still, like, it gives you something to aspire to.
So, Sumit Sarkar, there are a few key tenets of Rocket League. Number one, the games are quick, right? You're not making a half an hour or a 45-minute commitment. Number two, as Owen said, it is simple to understand. You know, number three, there's some depth to it. Number four, it looks great, right? I mean, we haven't even talked about that. It just, you know, it's not like some amazing technical masterpiece visually, but I mean, it looks great. You know, it's got some interesting, you know, visuals to it. There's a bunch of different ways to play it. It's not one of those games when you're playing online, you're constantly just bombarded, you know, especially if you're playing with randoms, you know, with terrible people or, you know, constant quitters, although, you know, people will sometimes quit. There's a lot of lessons to be learned from Rocket League. Sumit, will the big-time sports publishers learn those lessons, and will we see answers, or, you know, will we see the big-time publishers do something based upon the lessons that Rocket League is teaching?
Well, you know, it's hard to say at this point. It's so new. It's clearly, you know, struck a nerve, but it's so similar to sports, yet so different that I think it's really hard to compare it to your traditional simulation sports experiences. But the number one thing for me that I noticed about Rocket League is, as someone who hasn't played it at all, it's eminently watchable. Like, I'm not a person at all who likes, like, I'm not into esports in terms of, I don't like watching people play video games, really. I mean, like, sure, speedruns are cool, and like, it's really, I can certainly admire someone who's talented enough to pull something special off, or, you know, like the Nintendo World Championships during E3, that was really cool to watch in Super Mario Maker. But generally, I don't do stuff like watch Dota or League of Legends or whatever. But this afternoon, Giant Bomb did a live stream where they had like their East Coast office versus the West Coast office, 3-on-3. And I watched it for a good like 20 minutes when I should have been like writing an article. And it's just like really fun to watch. Just like, and I was like, and you know, someone else said in the chat, like, I'm watching soccer, aren't I? And it's that, but it's like so much more fast paced, and it's, you know, because you're also seeing these people on your screen, and you know, they're yelling at each other, but they're also strategizing among themselves, and you know, using shorthand and things like that that they're coming up with on the fly. And that's something that you really don't get in the quite the same way with the simulation sports games. You know, companies like Virgin Gaming and Major League Gaming have done tournaments with Madden and FIFA and games like that for years now. But I feel like they don't catch on, or those games haven't caught on for that purpose in the same way that even something like Call of Duty has. Which is, I mean, you know, yes, some of those games have esports stuff or esports elements built in, but you know, it's not League of Legends, where you have a packed Staples Center watching the grand finals of your, you know, year-long championship league, right? And I was always kind of confused as to why sports games never took off in that fashion. And I'm not sure if it's because the developers haven't built in those esports elements directly into the game. You know, a lot of those games have things like spectator modes and, you know, really easy ways to just watch other people play from directly within the game as opposed to having to go to somewhere like Twitch. But it's something they're certainly thinking about. I was on this conference call last week for the EA Sports Hockey League beta, and you know, we were grilling Sean Ramjag Singh and Ben Ross about the mode, and somebody asked about esports with EA Sports Hockey League. It seems like a natural fit, and they're like, "Yeah, you know, it's something that we're certainly looking into, and you know, we think that sports video games and really all video games are moving in that direction, but you know, nothing to announce at this time, that kind of thing." And I feel like that's really where they could take some cues from Rocket League, which doesn't even have like esports stuff super integrated at this point, but Psyonix has said that, you know, it's on the way or they want to build it. So that's somewhere I think that is something that I think is really a growth area for traditional sports games.
I think so. I've always had two theories on this over the years for why the games don't get bigger esports wise. So the first one always to me is that, and this is more a selfish one, perhaps for like what my audience is on Operation Sports and stuff, where it's like people who are into simulation sports are not going to want to watch how the tournament players play for the most part. And whether that's a small or big audience, it still fractures your audience to some extent. You're not going to see quote unquote real football played for a lot of these games. And that's disconcerting or a turnoff or maybe a whole host of other things. And the other thing to me is it's not so much that I don't think the game itself can be watched easily with or without more spectator mode and all that. I think it's more that if you watch a lot of the high-level sports games, like NBA 2K, for example, you know, one of the classic things that kind of broke the game and kind of made tournaments uninteresting to watch at one point was that there was a 1-3-1 zone and you trap in the corners. And it's just like, you don't play zone in the NBA, more or less. But the point is, when you're playing these simulation sports games a lot of time, you're breaking the simulation to your advantage to then win these tournaments, where something like Rocket League is not built around that. And it doesn't mean that every sports game has to be an arcade game or to work, but at the same time, Rocket League has no jurisdiction in the realm of realism. It's just a car soccer game, which is, I can't curse, right? Total crap on every level. So it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to live up to any standard. And something like WWE All-Stars, well, I love that game. It didn't get another version, I don't think, but like it was fantastic, and it's probably the best thing that wrestling-wise that's come out in 5 years. But we didn't see that again. I'm not sure why, but the same thing applies, where it's outrageous from the start, and you accept that, and it's fun to watch and play for that reason.
That studio closed, by the way.
Oh,
yeah, it was the same.
Were they making those
studio,
legends?
Right?
Were they making the legend of WrestleMania game before that? Was that the same studio? This is kind of a side thing.
I'm sure about that.
Yeah. Okay. But I agree with you, Chase. And the thing is that also the problem with, I think, esports for traditional team-based sports games is that esports are all about, you know, even if they're team games, it's all about individual players controlling everybody. You know, the outcome is completely determined by your skill on the sticks or the keyboard and mouse. And if you're looking at a game like Madden or FIFA, if it is, you know, one-on-one, like so much of that is out of your hands. It's controlled by the CPU simulation. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that you know, is that you just have no control over and no impact on how it plays out. And so that's why I'm, you know, hopeful for something like EA Sports Hockey League, where, you know, you have 6v6 all human controlled players, or, you know, 11v11 FIFA, where that has, I think, more of a potential to hopefully catch on in that way.
There's also the issue with player ratings and variation in team strength. Remember a few years ago when THQ still existed and they had UFC, they put into the UFC game a mode where the ratings for the fighters was equalized. And they did that because they thought they were going to get it into esports. So you have that balancing on both sides. And like you said, it comes down to player skill. And yeah, you're right, because the EA Sports Hockey League, what they're doing with it this year is you're not messing with ratings. They're putting in player classes, and then in an esports type environment, it'd be about choosing the player class that suits you, and then if you're teaming up with other people, putting the teams together, and then but then it's still even in the end. So it's a lot of interesting elements to all that.
So that is a great segue into our last little quick topic here. There is, as we are published on Friday, July 31st, right now going on is a EA Sports Hockey League beta. Anybody who's got NHL 15 can hop right in, put their disc in, or bring up their digital copy and download the NHL 16 EA SHL beta. I don't remember something like this ever happening before. Chase, we'll start with you. Two quick questions. Number one, what do you think the overall reception to this will be? And number two, is this perhaps a harbinger of other types of things that will happen, you know, with sports games sort of as we continue down this very different console generation than the previous ones?
Well, so I think it's definitely obviously going to happen more. I think there's already rumors of a bunch of stuff coming out for FIFA for their online team play and seasons and a whole bunch of other things. So it seems like it could go even beyond just their team play modes. Beyond that, I think it just makes sense, right? I mean, like, these games, for all intents and purposes, are year-round titles. They come out every year, but even beyond that, you're playing them for a lot of the year. And so why not give the people that are hardcore enough to be sticking around all the time a chance to get in and playtest your game? I mean, playtests are useful when you just bring randoms in and you have them play your game. But when it comes to stuff like the online team play or the EA Sports Hockey League, you're talking to a different type of person. Like, you're talking to a person who's playing your game day in and day out, probably. And so you want to get as many of those people playing your game as early as possible. Therefore, you can make more changes and hopefully put out something that's better and more tuned by the time the game comes out. Obviously, you have to take development time out of that to, you know, do that ahead of time. But it probably, I would say, seems like a good call and the right choice. And I think people will love it. People like playing things that they own, and getting to play a new version of it for free is always, hey, who's going to complain about that?
Owen, good question for you. And I'm not being cynical, but let's just say NHL 15 was received as positively as it typically had been in years past. You know, we've long documented the shortfalls and struggles that NHL 15 has. Do you think that this EASHL NHL 16 beta would still, you know, would still have happened? Do you think there has nothing to do with it? You know, what's your take on sort of why this is happening at this point in time?
Well, that's a fair question. I don't really, I have no technical understanding of what it takes to get, you know, again, what we're talking about is a legacy feature that's being brought over to new hardware. Obviously, I'm going to assume that means some sort of change in the code base that they need to get right. And so, you know, obviously a beta, you know, gives them the opportunity to evaluate that. But in the past, what I have understood with regard to, because I asked this question of NBA 2K when it would have its online problems, you know, why don't you guys do a beta? Why can't you do a beta? And the answer back, you know, then 2011, 2010, and I believe them, is, you know, we really don't have the time to do that. You know, the you know, the rest of the, you know, production calendar is taken up with other things. So yeah, yes, I think there could be some PR goodwill gesture that's tied up into this. It shows that they're extending themselves, obviously listening to the community. That's a theme that they have been trying to express. Sumit mentioned as much in his preview of EASHL. You know, for us at Polygon, I think it's a blend of both instincts, you know, to, you know, test a feature, but also to, you know, give people something tangible to say, hey, we are working in. And obviously, you know, yes, we will do something for free. I mean, this is nothing but a cost unit to them. But I think there is some truth to the idea that by doing this, it's a little bit of a give back, of a PR win, you know, that they're again listening to the community, and then here, hey, here's something concrete that can point that at.
Go ahead, Chase.
Real quick, I mean, the NHL team, no doubt, is on like apology tour 2015. Like, there's no question about that. But I doubt it has much to do with the net code. I mean, they did have OTP back in the game by the winner. And so, like, I don't think it has much to do with that. I think it is a pretty fundamental change to take out ratings and then just have these classes. Like, you want to hope they're – obviously, they can change them anytime after the game comes out. But you'd hope they'd want to nail these soon, like, or sooner than later. So I think that's probably a bigger thing than the net code aspect to it.
Submit, you're a hockey guy, even though you like the worst possible team. Are you going to check out the EA Sports Hockey League NHL 16 beta?
Yeah, I'm super excited. In terms of, you know, whether it's a give back or whatever, I mean, sure, it's nice that people who paid $60 for NHL 15 and, you know, didn't get their money's worth last year have this little nugget for the next week. But it also means that, you know, as Brian caught from the Ask EA Sports NHL page, that there's no demo. Or, I mean, I don't know if it also means, I don't know if that they're necessarily, you know, connected, but there won't be a demo for NHL 16. So the only way to play it ahead of the release is this, or if you're an EA Access subscriber. So the thing that's a positive for the beta, I think, at this point is, you know, what Chase was saying in terms of them getting feedback on how it works, especially because, you know, they're doing it at the end of July, a month before release, which to my mind will still give them enough time to implement changes based on that feedback. I feel like you see a lot of games like shooters, you know, have a beta come out like less than a month before the game is supposed to come out, and at that point, you know, it's not a beta. It's just like a stress test for the servers, and, like, you know, fine, that's okay. Just say as much. But here, I think they really are looking to get some feedback from the diehard players on the really sweeping changes to the mode, and that's why I'm excited to jump in just to see how it works, because I haven't, you know, really spent a lot of time with EA SHL in years, so a lot of it will be new to me.
Brian Weedy, you and I and other Hit the Pass folks will be streaming some NHL 16 EA Sports Hockey League beta over the next, you know, week or so. It's going to be some fun. Do you think this will generate more goodwill? I mean, clearly it's going to generate more awareness. Whether or not that awareness translates into anything, you know, concrete, we don't know. But do you think this is going to create some legitimate, you know, it's not truly tangible, but tangible goodwill that will ultimately help NHL 16, both from a perception standpoint as well as a, you know, perhaps help boost its sales?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I think, number one, you're limiting this beta to people who have NHL 15. Now EA Access does open up another avenue for someone to play without actually owning the game, but you're still restricting it to people, and there's going to be a lot. You know, if you're expecting this to, you know, increase interest in the game and generate more sales, I don't think that's going to achieve that. But it's for the people who are really into the game already, or who are excited about this mode specifically, then yeah, it may give them more of a reason to anticipate the game. But like we talked about earlier, so many games are coming out. It's in a tough position where, you know, I'm not sure if this is going to do much good, but as far as sales go, at least. But I think it can definitely help the mode, like was being just discussed now, as far as tuning it and making adjustments. They'll have time to be able to do that server side by the time the game actually releases. So I don't see it really doing much of, you know, it's not going to get major publicity because it's just being restricted to those people who can play NHL 15. And as we know, there weren't that many of those people. And EA Access is only Xbox One, so it's still a limited reach that this beta is going to have.
Well, all right. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Smith Sarkar from Polygon, Owen Good from Polygon, Chase Beckett from Operation Sports and Brian Weedy from Pasta Padre and Hit the Pass. Yeah, please go check out Hit the Pass every day. We're putting good stuff out there, whether it's written pieces, video pieces. I want to thank everybody who's been visiting the site and leaving such such very nice comments. And I just again want to say thank you to everybody who've been asking, you know, what's been going on with the show. You know, it's been summertime. A lot of vacations, a lot of time off, you know, so we're trying to, you know, just trying to keep everything rolling. We'll obviously be, you know, back to a every week schedule, not in the not too distant future, perhaps even as soon as next week, but certainly once, you know, the fall games roll out. So I want to thank everybody for continuing to listen, continuing to subscribe, continuing to give us feedback. We appreciate all of our listeners very much. And so on behalf of Owen, Sumit, Brian, and Chase, this is Rich. I want to say thank you, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Wait, didn't I say B-cut that time?
Like some abortion. Oh, that would...
Damn it.
It was really quick on the, I don't know.
B-cut? Yeah, it was B-cut. That's what it was.
Something like that, yeah.
Like, yeah, you know that old 90s TV show, Beckett's World, the one that Beckett competed with Bill Nye, the science guy? Yeah, that
well,
one.
Chase, to be fair, the first time I had Brian on the show, I called him Brian Weedy. So, yeah, that's probably, you know, and, yeah. And, you know, and I still call him Brian Weedy.
I don't really I haven't that. Forgiven you for that, Rich.
And he called me, Chase, he called me Owen Goad, you know? Like I had the umlaut over the second O.
I'm not even
me Owen Fuckface. I don't understand why that.
I'm not even going to tell you how I botched Sumit's name the first time. So like basically, you know, I get everybody's name wrong every time. So my
actually,
apologies,
funny story. Sumit doesn't know this. Before I met Sumit for the first time years ago, I made sure to check around and say, is it Sumit or Sumit? I was asking people before I actually talked to him. I was like, I'm not going to get this wrong. I look like an asshole.
I'm pretty sure I called him Samit, but instead mm-hmm. of Sumit the first time.
That's pretty common. Yeah.
Samus Sarkar.
Yeah. Samus? Yeah.
Damn it, Samit.
I've never heard that one before. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're real clever.
Yeah, I know I am. Yeah, I'm a real clever guy. I'm a real smart guy, real funny too.
Well, thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast. We'd like to invite you to go check out hitthepass.com, a website all about the sports games of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. We've got video, we've got audio, we've got written pieces, all about the sports games that we love. On behalf of everybody from Hit the Pass and the Press Row Podcast, thanks.